seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Relocation talk in Major League Baseball. Doesn't happen often. That's what's on tap today. Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. Can't call it a huge surprise, but it was a topic of discussion, to say the least, that dominated the late morning, early afternoon. Major League Baseball pushing the Oakland A's to explore a new market due to a stadium holdup. There's a lack of progress going on right now in Oakland, and so now the A's have begun actively pursuing relocation. This comes from Major League Baseball after a statement that was issued last night instructing the A's to start looking at other markets. Here's the quote. MLB is concerned with the rate of progress on the A's new ballpark effort with local officials and other stakeholders in Oakland. The A's have worked very hard to advance a new ballpark in downtown Oakland for the last 4 years, investing significant resources while facing multiple roadblocks. We know they remain deeply committed to succeeding in Oakland, and with two other sports franchises recently leaving the community, their commitment to Oakland is now more important than ever. That was a statement from the league. Now, when you look at this on the surface, you would say, yes, they're trying to get something done. This is a scare tactic, because for so long in the National Football League, there was a market that was used as leverage. Los Angeles was leveraged time and time again with the Seahawks, with the Vikings, with the Falcons. It was always leverage. Until one day, it was no longer leverage. You could use that to get exactly what you wanted in other markets. That was what LA was. Want a new stadium? Threatened to move to Los Angeles, the second largest market, the second largest media market in this country. Typically, you'll get what you want. Once the Rams relocated, and the NFL gave the Chargers a year to decide if they wanted to, and then eventually they did, that threat was gone. You couldn't use that media market as leverage anymore. So what seems to be the new market? It's Vegas. Vegas is the new market in which you can leverage yourself a new stadium. It's an extension of the Los Angeles market. I think that gets overlooked. When the NFL allowed the Raiders to move to Las Vegas, it worked for multiple reasons. One being that the Raiders had such a following in LA that moving them to Vegas, what is it, 3.5-4 hours away, it's just an extension of the market. So it somewhat worked. You almost put them in SoCal without putting them in SoCal. I know several people in Las Vegas that work in sports, and they have told me that Henderson, Nevada is ready right now to commit to a Major League Baseball team. And I know it's only a matter of time before we have an MLB team in Vegas. It's only a matter of time. But maybe it's going to happen sooner rather than later. Because when you look at the potential markets that Oakland will look at, I know there's been mention of Portland. There's no way the A's are going to move to Portland over Las Vegas. Come on. Nashville, not going to happen. You're not going to take the Oakland A's and move them across country. Won't happen. Not when you have a city that has already successfully opened up expansion to hockey in the NHL with the Golden Knights. That was a huge success. I mean, if you haven't been to T-Mobile yet, for one, it's a pretty cool venue on the inside. It really is. But the excitement around the Golden Knights was through the roof. And it helped that they had early success. But when you look at what the Raiders did in a franchise value move, I mean, Forbes just about 4 or 5 days ago released the most valuable franchises in the world, professional sports franchises in the world. And the Las Vegas Raiders come in at number 29. Forbes values the Raiders at $3.1 billion. Over the last 5 years, that is a change in value by 117%, which is astronomical, 117%. And just looking at the sports franchises worth the most, number one, the Cowboys, no surprise, at $5.7 billion. Number two is the Yankees at $5.2 billion. And I'm going through the list right now as we speak. I believe there are only two baseball franchises in the top 15. Correction, there's only two in the top 16. The Los Angeles Dodgers come in at $3.5 billion. And then in the top 20, there's only three because the Boston Red Sox come in at number 20. I'm not saying the Oakland A's would all of a sudden skyrocket into the top 20, but that huge increase of 117%, which you saw from the Raiders, who were a national brand, it would be similar with the Oakland A's. And to take it one step further, as I've mentioned the LA market, right now, the Los Angeles Rams are worth more than almost any other sports franchise in the world. They are tied at number 13. The Los Angeles Rams, they are tied with Manchester City Soccer, worth $4 billion. And over the last 5 years, they've had an increase of 176%. So again, knowing what I know about the Las Vegas market, knowing who I know in the Las Vegas market, Henderson, Nevada will obviously make a play, and they will be willing to commit to the Oakland A's immediately. I can assure you that right now. Now, as far as the A's finding a suitable spot or a suitable situation in Oakland, there's nothing suitable there. There's a proposed ballpark set about 6 miles from the Coliseum where they play, but there's no mass transit. And see, these are the little logistics that you have to pay attention to. It was something I learned during the massive NFL relocation to LA. You got to pay attention to these little tidbits. 6 miles from the Coliseum, no mass transit. That's a factor. The A's and Oakland have said that they plan to build a gondola that would go from the waterfront area to the ballpark over Interstate 880 to downtown. I'll believe it when I see it. In fact, looking at what's proposed right now, it would take the City Council of Oakland to vote on a $12 billion mixed-use development before late July in order to get this to go away. If the City of Oakland was going to agree to a $12 billion mixed-use development, wouldn't they have kept the Raiders? I think Oakland's time, or the A's time in Oakland, I think it's numbered. I don't believe the A's are going to be in Oakland much longer. They always say where there's smoke, there's fire. Yeah, I agree with that. Now, I had mentioned that relocation to Major League Baseball, it just doesn't happen often. This is the third stop for the A's. They moved twice since they were founded in Philly. Kansas City in 1955 and Oakland for 1968. And since just two MLB teams have moved in the last 50 years, that was when the Washington Senators became the Texas Rangers. That was back in the early 70s. And then the Expos, when they transformed into the Washington Nationals. That was back in 2005. That was 16 years ago. So seeing this type of talk in Major League Baseball, it doesn't happen often. Much more frequent in the NFL than in Major League Baseball. But if you think that Oakland is going to come up with a stadium plan for the A's after everything that's gone down over the last little while, I don't see it happening. I believe that Oakland will be without a football team, a basketball team, and a baseball team here relatively soon. That was some of the news that came out earlier today. Now, let's move over to horse racing. Yesterday, we had a long conversation about the Kentucky Derby and what would be next for Medina Spirit. The winner of the Kentucky Derby will, in fact, participate in the Preakness this weekend. Medina Spirit, two other horses that are trained by Bob Baffert, will be under extra scrutiny leading up to the race on Saturday, and I think it's a good thing for the sport. I said that yesterday, especially if Medina Spirit was to win the Preakness. I kind of want the controversy surrounding horse racing. I want this story for 2.5 weeks. What would the Triple Crown look like if Medina Spirit was to win, knowing that his victory in the Kentucky Derby is heavily disputed? But Steve Bordstein on the show yesterday said there is no way the Medina Spirit will not run in the Preakness. There's no way. From a network TV advertising look alone, you cannot. How do you market that? What would that do to the Preakness? Should be no surprise. Medina Spirit will be running this Saturday in the Preakness, looking to go 2-for-2 and setting up what would be just an epic story for the Triple Crown on the Belmont in a couple of weeks. Those are the two big stories coming out of the national sports scene. We'll take a look at the NBA. Last night, the Utah Jazz coming up short. We'll get to that in a moment. But LeBron James will miss at least another day. He's opting out of the next Laker game against the New York Knicks, which will be tonight. That means that James will target a return tomorrow against the Houston Rockets. Now, we are down to it as far as what's remaining on the NBA schedule. Not a lot left. The Utah Jazz did not help their own cause last night, suffering a loss to the Golden State Warriors. I still think the one seed is all but wrapped up for the Jazz. I don't see Phoenix catching Utah. But who will Utah play in the first round? That's what we don't know, because right now, 7 through 10, the Lakers, the Warriors are now 2.5 back of the Lakers. And then we have Memphis and San Antonio because we get this stupid play-in round this year. 1 through 6, Utah, Phoenix, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Mavericks, the Blazers. I think it's pretty much set. Maybe LA can catch Portland and climb up to the sixth spot. That would put LA against LA in the opening round. It's a big game tonight for the Lakers. It really is. In the Eastern Conference, if we're talking about the Knicks, they're probably, I don't want to say they're set. They're 4, 5, or 6. We know that. Right now, a half game up on the Hawks, one game up on the Heat, but with the Jaylen Brown injury news coming out in Boston, I don't see the Knicks slipping below the Celtics. So looking at the schedule in the NBA, we had a short slate last night. That is not the case tonight, although the Utah Jazz will get the night off. They return tomorrow to take on Portland. 5 o'clock hour, we get Denver at Charlotte. Pistons will play host to Minnesota. We get Miami at Boston, and then the Clippers at the Raptors. 6 o'clock tonight, Philly will travel on the road to take on Indiana. We get Brooklyn at Chicago, and the Grizzlies will play host to the Mavericks. 7 o'clock, Dallas at Milwaukee. We get Phoenix going toe-to-toe with Golden State, Oklahoma City at Sacramento, and then the Knicks and the Lakers in the nightcap that game on TNT. We will talk more NBA. We'll look at the playoff odds, the seeding odds, all that coming up in just a bit here on Drive Time Sports. Let's take a look at day baseball games. We have one game going on right now. The San Francisco Giants, who lead the NL West, hold a 4-2 lead on the Texas Rangers. This one in the seventh inning. One game getting ready to start. In fact, it is just underway. The Cubs taking on the Indians on the road. 4:30, it's the Reds and the Pirates. And then once we hit 5 o'clock, we have all kinds of baseball moving on throughout the entire evening from now all the way until 8 o'clock. We always say baseball talk for Wednesday, but everyone is talking about the Oakland A's and the idea that Vegas may be getting a baseball team very soon. Again, you're going to hear all kinds of locations that this A's team could move to. Don't buy into any of it. It's Las Vegas, I'm telling you. If they leave Oakland, they go to Vegas. Let's break for just a moment. Local sports recap is coming up. We're also going to talk to Coach Jeff Cincineros of the Carbon Dino baseball team. The season, it will resume on Thursday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. 3 days left for baseball and softball in the local area. Carbon is in a win-or-go-home situation from here on out. Every game you're playing to extend your season. We'll talk to Coach Cincineros about that when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
Couple of days away from resuming the high school baseball 3A state championship tournament. Travel up north for the final 3 days of the season, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We have two teams from the Castle Country in the one-loss bracket. Still an opportunity for both Carbon and Emory to work their way through that bottom back up to the championship game, and that's what we're going to talk about right now. We'll start by talking about the Carbon Dinos. Played host to a pod over the weekend. They finished 1-1, a victory over South Sevier, a loss to Grantsville. Joining us to talk about that, we have head coach Jeff Cincineros. And, Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Good to chat with you again. Thank you.
Coach, we'll start by talking about the way the opening weekend went. You guys get to play host to a pod. You welcome in South Sevier and then Grantsville and Manti. And we'll start with the South Sevier game. Not an easy task. It's the third time you see this team. And even though you had your way with them in the regular season, it's always different when you get to play a team a third time. And you guys handle them. You keep them off balance. I know that there was some great pitching in this contest, a 6-0 performance. All in all, when you look at the way your team performed in that first game against South Sevier, how happy were you?
Well, you're obviously happy to get away with the win. That's a tricky game for you. I mean, you're supposed to win that game. But, again, this is high school athletics, and there's not a guarantee, you know, in anything. So, you know, expecting to win, supposed to win, but you still have to win. And so for us to come out 6-0, of course, I'm happy with the win. Did I think we could play better? Most definitely. I mean, our pitching and defense I thought was awesome in that first game. Kate Dimmick did an excellent job throwing a complete game for us. Defense was solid. We just didn't hit the ball the way I thought we should. I mean, we had a lot of line drive outs in that game that, you know, if you hit them one way or the other, or they'd be singles or doubles. And I give, you know, South Sevier credit. They didn't kick the ball around. You know, for a team, their record really, in my opinion, didn't say how good a team they actually are. I was actually surprised that they lost the second game to Manti. I thought they would beat Manti, but I think they were a little deflated after our game, because I know they came out against us with a lot of talk and a real upbeat attitude. And I really believe, you know, they believe they could beat us. And that's what you have to do. You got to believe you can beat somebody no matter what seed they are. So I thought they played extremely well. Happy with us getting that W. I just thought we could have hit the ball better. But, of course, when you can shut somebody out in the state tournament and get a win, you're doing good things.
And as I mentioned defensively, Coach, we saw some great pitching in this game. And it's kind of been a reoccurring theme time and time again. Kate Dimmick has been just fantastic for you. Gives up just 3 hits, strikes out 9. And I believe it only took him just over 100 pitches, if I'm not mistaken, to get through this complete game.
Yeah, he exactly that. I mean, he did all those things. You know, I think only ended up with 2 walks on the day through 7 innings, which, you know, I'll take any day. And, you know, just did a nice job all day long and kept us involved. Defense, you know, made some good plays. We turned a couple double plays for him. But, you know, for the most part, he started out ahead of every hitter. When you do that as a pitcher, you know, you're setting yourself up for success. So, you know, Kate did an excellent job, had a triple at the beginning of the game to help us get on the scoreboard as well. And, you know, just had a nice game that day. And everybody else, you know, chipped in and did their small part in that win. But, yeah, extremely happy with the pitching performance that we got in that first game. And as we talked about the second game, I think that was a big drawback for us, is just we had too many walks from our pitching staff in the second game.
Yeah, that was definitely something that played a factor late, Coach. If we jump ahead and we talk about the second game, a loss to Grantsville, good team, 7-5, a game that goes back and forth. 7th inning actually proved to be the difference in this one.
Yeah, I mean, you got the number 5 seeded team in Grantsville, a team that we beat earlier at their place, and really kind of handled for the most part, almost 10 run them. But, you know, again, they came in fired up, and everybody's better than they were a month ago, and we knew that. And, you know, we just kind of struggled pitching-wise all day long. You know, walks hurt us in that game. We had 11 walks total. You know, I think we ended up with 5 errors. And when you have 5 errors and 11 walks, you're it's a recipe for disaster. And, you know, I think we only had 5 or 6 hits on the day as well, so we did not hit the ball well enough to, you know, overcome those walks and errors, and especially with a good team on the field. And you know, that's the outcome. I mean, they got us for 3 runs in the 7th on, you know, some miscues, error to start the inning, a couple of other errors on some bunts during the inning, you know, and then you have guys on, bases loaded, and you get a single down the line, you're going to score 2 runs every time. So you just can't put yourself in that situation with a good team, especially to close them out. You know, we were able to get a run in the 7th and have bases loaded and a chance to at least tie the ball game up with a single. But, you know, the things just didn't go our way that way in the second game. And like I told the guys after the game, it hurts and it stings and it should. But it's just a bump in the road for us. You know, it just makes us, in my opinion, have to focus up a little bit harder and do, you know, come through the bracket in a little bit different way than we would have to begin with. But, you know, by no means does it count us out for an opportunity to win a state title.
Yeah, Coach, and we can talk about the road in just a moment, and I know that at this stage in the season, this kind of talk doesn't really do you much, but even though you guys had walks and errors that contributed to the setback, bottom of the seventh inning, you have a chance to win the game.
Yeah, we had a chance. I mean, we left guys on base all day long, as a matter of fact, but like I said, with, you know, in the seventh inning, we had the bases loaded and an opportunity to score some runs and just couldn't get it done. We plated one run in the seventh inning, but had an opportunity to plate some more and at least tie the game up or even take the lead. And, you know, and had the good part of our lineup to start that inning coming up. You always want to see your top of your lineup coming back up, and, you know, it's who you want at the plate. And I want every one of those kids back at the plate again. You know, I trust them, and, you know, things just didn't go our way, and I know they want that opportunity again to prove themselves, and they're going to get it, you know, coming up here in the next few days. So, again, you know, still had an opportunity to win a game, even though a team beat us a couple years ago for a state title, and they're a good team. But we definitely gave the game to Grantsville on Saturday. It's not something that they took from us.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbondale baseball team. Coach, now that you suffered a loss, not all hope is lost. I mean, there's still a very logical road for you guys to get back and potentially win a state championship. And at first, it's going to be American Leadership Academy. This game will take place Thursday, Juan Diego High School, afternoon start, and then a win there means you'd move on to face either Emory or North St. Pete. And I know you and I had this conversation off the air. You were happy with what you saw from this team in practice yesterday, and I know that's a big step forward knowing now it's win or go home time.
Yeah, I mean, you can a big letdown for us on Saturday, so you're unsure how your team is going to show up on Monday for practice. I mean, are they done? Are they not done? And, you know, no one knows how that. I figured we'd show up ready to go. And yesterday was good practice. Spent a lot of time on defense, trying to prepare ourselves for some situations that, you know, kind of caught us off guard a little bit, that we didn't play well on Saturday and went over a bunch of things. You talk about the road. I mean, ALA, we just went to their place and played them a week ago. You know, had a lot of success. Every day is a different day. I mean, I would take the same output that we had a week ago with them and be happy with it. But, again, I know it's going to be a different game when we play them on Thursday. And then you're going to get, you know, the winner of a Sam Pete and Emory contest, which, you know, kind of is an interesting one. I believe we're the team in North Sam Pete. But I know North Sam Pete will get in away from Emory early in the year. Just playing the season, I mean, you just got to play good baseball, and you got to have the ball bounce your way in order to move on. So, you know, depending on what happens Thursday, I mean, we got to take one game at a time. So we're going to focus on the 1:30 game with ALA and then tackle the next game if we move forward. And so it's really right now, you know, pitch came up and everything. It's a tough road to come back to win 7 games to win a state title in 3 days. But we've talked all year long about having the deepest pitching staff in 2A, and I still believe we have the best pitching staff and the deepest one in 2A, and a team that's capable of winning 7 games in 3 days. And so, you know, we're going to have some luck along the way. We're going to have some things going our way and battle through it. And, you know, if we can do that, I still really like our chances to come through and be there on Saturday.
Yeah, Coach, there's not many teams in the 3A classification that are built to maneuver through this one-loss bracket, and it's almost imperative that you win at least one of those first two games because there's just not a lot of teams that can do this. However, looking at the road that Carbon has in front of them and knowing how many arms you have, this gives you an opportunity as a manager to get really creative in the way you handle these arms. But you said something a moment ago that we can't overstress. You have to take it one game at a time. I know that's coach talk, but now literally you're in a spot where you have to take it one game at a time. And so I guess if that means using as many arms as you have to, that's what you do, right?
Right. I mean, you know, you don't think a lot of people, especially parents, understand the pitch count rules. And so, you know, you go pull a guy out and he's pitching well and, you know, you're doing things and you kind of have to have a feel for your team. I mean, are you confident that, you know, you're playing well enough to win this game if you pull this pitcher out in order to save him for another day, or are you not? And, you know, you have to look at the game in a completely different way. You know, I did this 2 years ago when we were in the no-loss bracket on Thursday playing Grantsville and had our best pitcher, Cody Lowe, on the mound. You know, I pulled him out to save him, to have him for another day. You know, we ended up losing the game, but at the time we were losing anyway, and we just weren't playing well. We weren't hitting the ball well. I really just didn't have an indication that it was a game we were going to win no matter who I had on the mound at that time, because we just weren't doing anything offensively. And, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people question why you pull your best pitcher out and you lose the game. Well, you know, there are a lot of things you got to look at. And, you know, I thought that was going to be the right decision. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But you're right. You got to look at it one game at a time. You've got to win. You know, you got to win. If you don't win, you do go home at this point in time now that you're in the one-loss bracket already. You know, luxury at that point in time 2 years ago, we were still in the no-loss bracket. So you're making a decision knowing that you're still going to come back and play another game. But again, there's a lot of things that go into it with pitch count nowadays. With the pitchers we have and guys that are capable of throwing, you know, a complete game, but coming in and just throwing two or three innings for us, I really feel confident about, you know, everybody that I put out there. Again, we've got to eliminate the walks. And we've struggled all year. It's because we have struggled with throwing strikes. And, you know, we just can't do that. We've got to eliminate pitches. And we talk about that all the time, that, you know, you can't go out there and go full count with everybody in an inning or have 25, 30 pitch innings. You got to go out and have the 7, 8, 9 pitch innings and be on top of everybody. And then you can have a guy throw a complete game and throw less than 60 pitches. So, again, it's a game by game situation, but I'm super confident in the pitchers that we have and the team that we have that, you know, we can get this done.
Yeah, and Coach, I guess it's fair to say that at this stage, knowing that by the time you get to Friday, teams are going to be laboring pitching-wise, it's scoring runs, right? I mean, we've seen, you guys have done it, we've seen Emory go through the one-loss bracket and really extend the season. In order to do that, you have to score runs at this stage now.
Yeah, well, you're going to start seeing teams number 3 and number 4 guys, and those are guys that you should put up a bunch of runs on. And we've seen that, you know, in the state tournament now that we've had the pitch count rules. I mean, we've seen semifinal games be 22-1. And, you know, it's just lopsided scores because a team has no pitching left, you know, come Saturday. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that you get into a tournament and you have some guys, you know, that probably aren't ready to pitch in those type of games. But I think it's the coach's job to get them ready to pitch throughout the season. I mean, this starts clear back in March. When you start throwing guys out on the mound knowing that, hey, they're going to have to pitch at some point in time for you come second week of May. And if you just always leave them on the bench or, you know, have them just, you know, throwing sophomore games or whatever, you know, that's not going to happen. So, you know, I feel confident with the guys we have to throw, that they've all seen enough time on the mound to be successful. And, you know, again, it's a tough road when you have to deal with that. But it's a road that I know we can come through.
Well, Coach, it's always fun to get you on and talk about the team. I definitely appreciate the time today, and I know we'll be catching up again real soon. Best of luck this weekend.
Thanks, Jim.
We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll flip over to the national side of things right after this. Well, we said there's 3 phases to the Major League Baseball season. 3 phases. One, you have about the first month of the year. Everybody's really excited to get baseball back. It dominates sports talk radio. Everybody's optimistic. 162 game season. Anything can happen. That's phase one. And we're in that phase for about a month, maybe 2 months. And then it starts to dwindle a little bit. Yeah, we're approaching phase two. That's what phase two is. It's the dog days of summer. Baseball gets us through the dog days of summer. And then phase three, that's after the All-Star break, things really start picking up. All of a sudden, we've hit August, and we're down to the final 2 months or so of the regular season, and all of a sudden, the games matter once again to the mass. I could talk baseball all day, every day with you, and I'd be totally happy with it at any stage of the season. It's fascinating to me, the 162-game season. If you look at the way things are shaping out right now, the most exciting race in all of baseball going into the season was the Dodgers and Padres in the NL West. And I wasn't the only one that said this. A lot of baseball analysts predicted that it would be a race to the end between the Dodgers and the Padres. Now, again, when we talk baseball, 162-game season, you have every team winning 60, losing 60, and then you got that middle 42 that really count. But the Giants right now hold the best record in the National League West. The San Francisco Giants, who have played great at home, not so great away from home, they lead the Padres by 2 games, who lead the Dodgers by a game. So right now, the defending World Series champs in 3rd place in the National League West. Over the course of 162 games, that kind of Cinderella play will work itself out, guaranteed. And that's what I consider the Giants. Cinderella story at this point in time. Early on in the season, they played great baseball. Don't get me wrong. But to believe that this team is a contender would be foolish, because they're not. Right now, however, they do lead the Rangers 4-2. This one in the ninth inning. In fact, the Giants about to close this one out to pick up yet another win. So while things continue to play out beautifully for San Francisco in the early going, things are not playing out well for the San Diego Padres. Fernando Tatis Jr. has tested positive for COVID-19. Two other players with the Padres have also been put on the injured list due to health and safety protocols. You know, one thing that has stood out to me early on in the baseball season, we haven't had a lot of this for major players. I know the Nationals had it early on in the season. They seem to work through that. Everyone seems to be back, healthy, fine. But as far as major talents, I think Fernando Tatis Jr. would be the biggest name that has tested positive for COVID-19 up to this point in time of the season. He has no symptoms. This is according to Jace Tingler. But per Major League Baseball's health and safety protocols, in order to return to the team, he has to isolate for 10 days, remain completely asymptomatic throughout that period, and then he has to undergo a cardiac evaluation, and the joint committee must then determine if he does not, that he does not pose a risk for infection. That's how he returns. So in a sense, it is similar as to what we saw in college football. Remember with Trevor Lawrence, the Clemson Tigers, he had to undergo the cardiac evaluation. We might not see Fernando Tatis for a little while. Now, the other two names that will join Tatis on the IL, that's Jurickson Profar and Jorge Mateo. They were placed on the injured list because of tracing protocol, so they have to quarantine for 7 days. They'll have to remain asymptomatic and test negative on day five or later in order to be welcomed back to the team. So the Padres will make some moves. Fernando Tatis has been nothing short of spectacular at times this season. When I watch this kid play, I forget he's only 22 years old. I think it's easy to forget he's only 22 years old. He's been so great. On the road, he's hit almost 400 with 6 home runs and 10 RBIs. That's on the road. He's been great. So while the Padres were the hot team in the offseason, things just have not really worked out in their favor in the early going in the regular season. And I went into this segment talking about the 162-game baseball season because, again, you can't overreact to it. But I would be a tad bit more concerned about the Padres than, say, a team like the Dodgers, than, say, a team like the Yankees, who are figuring it out. A team like the A's, who got off to a dreadful start and have figured it out. Because this is a Padre team that does not have a lot of continuity. They don't have a lot of experience together. It's a quick tidbit on the San Diego Padres. Fernando Tatis out for a little while. We're going to break one more time. We'll come back and talk NBA basketball right here on Drive Time Sports. We're back right after this. I'm going to end today's show by talking NBA basketball. It was a big night last night. Russell Westbrook becomes the all-time triple-double king of the NBA. He's been putting up some really gaudy numbers with Washington. I don't know how to really view Russell Westbrook anymore. I said once upon a time that there was one player, I go back about 3-4 years ago when I made the statement, that there was one player in the NBA that I would pay top dollar to see, and that was Russell Westbrook. That was back during his MVP season with Oklahoma City. I said I would pay top dollar to watch this guy play. I wouldn't even have to hesitate to dish out the money, because every time you watch him play, you know you're watching someone play with just that reckless abandon, right? He's a guy that you know wants to just not beat you. He wants to destroy you. I don't think that Russell Westbrook really ever figured out how to harness that rage that he plays with. I think the all-time greats have. You know, we're going into the Hall of Fame weekend, and you're going to hear a lot of Mamba mentality stories this week because Kobe Bryant's going into the Hall of Fame. That was a guy that learned how to really take control of his anger, play with that hatred on the court, wanted to rip your heart out, but he did it controlled. And the all-time greats figure out a way to do that. I think sometimes Russell Westbrook plays a little too erratic. It didn't work in Houston. I don't know that he was healthy last year, but it didn't work in Houston. As far as his play with the Wizards, You know, I don't think he was healthy for most of the season, but last night, 28, 13, and 21, that's what he finishes with. It's kind of a ridiculous stat line, isn't it? 28, 13, and 21. And I'm not taking anything away from Westbrook recording triple-double 182 because it's so impressive, him surpassing Oscar Robertson. And when you take a look at the top three, it's Russell Westbrook, Oscar Robertson, and Magic Johnson. And that is elite company. So I don't think you could take anything away from him. But are those empty stats? You know, because Washington right now, and Westbrook's gone on a tear lately, but this is a team that is 32-37. They obviously won the trade, the Wall for Westbrook deal. They won that trade. There's no question. Washington's probably going to sneak into the play-in round. No, probably. They're going to get in. What are they, 2.5 up now on Chicago? They get in. But if this doesn't translate to victories, at least in the play-in round, are they empty statistics? I think it's a fair question to ask. Because I think too often we've seen Russell Westbrook not necessarily chase triple-doubles, but the way the game is played today, triple-doubles aren't what they used to be, at least in my mind. I feel like I'm old man basketball by saying that. Get off my lawn, right? I just don't feel that a triple-double is the same today as it was back when Oscar and Magic played the game. We have so many possessions. We have long-range three-point shots. What happens when you miss a shot from 30 feet? It typically rockets off of the rim. It's easier for guards to grab boards. Westbrook is a guy that puts his head down. He wants to run down the floor. He sees the floor great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you have to hand out 21 assists. But we're seeing gaudy triple-double numbers from Russell Westbrook for a reason. And it's not as if when Magic was putting up triple-doubles, this guy was closing out the NBA Finals as a 20, 21-year-old kid winning Finals MVP. That's not what Russell Westbrook is doing. And so not to take anything away from him, because the record is what it is. He is now the all-time king in triple-doubles. I just have a hard time believing that it's not an empty statistic, at least more times than not, when we're talking about a Russell Westbrook triple-double. Now, I'll tell you one player who is not recording empty statistics. It was Steph Curry, and Jazz fans had an opportunity to see that live and in color last night. It's not that that game was not important to Utah. I think it was, but it was obviously more important to Golden State. And Steph Curry deserves some run for MVP this year. I'm through the roof excited about the season that this guy has put together. And the Warriors needed him to do it in order to get to the spot that they are at 36-33. They've won now 5 out of their last 6 games. They swept the Thunder. They beat the Pelicans. They beat the Rockets. But they beat the Jazz, even though Utah's without 2 of their 3 All-Stars. Big win last night for the Golden State Warriors. Give Steph Curry some MVP run. Out of time of this edition of the show. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. I want to thank Coach Jeff Cincinnatos. We'll see you. Same time, same place. We'll talk more Major League Baseball with Bill Lasky. And we'll catch up with Emory High School Baseball. That'll be on the show tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.